Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. Sudan continues to struggle with new cases of COVID-19.
We don't see the implementation of curfew in the town. People move around all the time. I'm currently speaking from my shop in the town market. People here don't adhere to the curfew directives.
And the UN mission in Abyei admits its failures to protect civilians.
We don't have the mandate to disarm other than seize arms from elements that enter the box.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of the Sudanese capital Khartoum are in panic mode after health officials confirmed 22 new cases of coronavirus. Sudan has 162 positive cases and 13 deaths. Some residents who previously dismissed the threats from the COVID-19 now say they are willing to adhere to World Health Organization guidelines. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese health authorities announced today that the country has 162 confirmed cases of COVID-19. Khartoum leads with 155, White Nile State has 3 cases, Jazeera State has 3, and River Nile State has 1 confirmed case. The government say one more patient died yesterday, bringing the death toll to 13. 14 people have fully recovered from the disease. Some Sudanese say the increasing number of cases frightens them. Samia Argawi, a resident of Khartoum's Jabra neighborhood, is one of them. Speaking in Arabic, Argawi says she will now take the protective measures seriously.
If I want to get something like bread from the bakery, during the time people are allowed to move, I make sure I wear gloves and mask. And when I get there, I have to keep distant. And in case if the place is crowded, I get home without buying anything. We can still survive on chapati or anything else.
Bella Ofendindima, a South Sudanese national, who resides in Khartoum's Jebel Awliya neighborhood, says reports of coronavirus cases in Sudan are causing panic in her community. Speaking in Arabic, Ufendi says, apart from the WHO guidelines for precautionary measures, she has also been taking herbs, which she believes are effective in treating coughs and any other chest infections.
Every 2 days I do prepare hibiscus at home, and all of us drink it every morning and evening. We wash our hands with soap frequently and use hand sanitizer. And overall, I do encourage everyone at home to continue praying so that we don't get infected with corona.
Health officials say they have collected samples from 14 people suspected of having coronavirus in El Gadarif State in eastern Sudan. They say the people who have been isolated are still waiting for their test results. El Gadarif resident Mahmoud Dagash says people in the area are also panicking as the number of cases continues to rise. Dagash believes the area might record confirmed cases of COVID-19 soon because there are reports of people being smuggled from Khartoum into the area despite the travel ban.
After we have these 14 cases of the suspected cases, we find all the people talk just about these cases and the necessity to get to block the borders between from Gadarif to the borders with Ethiopia and Kassala. Kassala also is a city at the borders with Eritrea.
Speaking in Arabic, Abdurrahim Muhammad Hassan, a resident of Al-Lubay town of northern Kordofan state, says his town has yet to record a case of COVID-19. But he says people do not adhere to the restrictions, including the nighttime curfew.
We don't see the implementation of curfew in the town. People move around all the time. I'm currently speaking from my shop in the town market. People here don't adhere to the curfew directives, and our people are also don't have enough awareness about the disease.
Authorities in Khartoum have closed all mosques, churches, and all forms of social gatherings for a period of 21 days as measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Health officials in Eastern Equatorial State Capital Torit say the town does not have any capacity to quarantine and isolate people who come in contact with COVID-19 patients. The state has one confirmed case. The team leader of the state's coronavirus task force says people who had contact with a corona patient are being quarantined in their homes for 14 days. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
Torit health officials say at least 16 people came into contact with the confirmed coronavirus patient in the Eastern Equatorial State Capital Torit. They say all 16 were asked to self-quarantine because the state does not have isolation facilities to house people for 14 days. Dr. Elijo Omoro, chairperson of Eastern Equatorial State Coronavirus Emergency Task Force and Director General of the now defunct Torit State Health Ministry, says a ward has been set up at Torit State Hospital for COVID-19 patients.
What we have is an isolation facility which is within the hospital, but this is where we keep people whom we think are actually sick, whom we strongly suspect have actually contracted COVID-19.
Dr. Omoro says later if contacts test positive and have trouble breathing, they can be transferred to an isolation ward established at Torit State Hospital for intensive care. Dr. John Isaac Natesio of Torit State Hospital says the isolation ward should be sufficient to handle COVID-19 patients.
The capacity for that ward used to be 24 when we're using it as for admitting malnourished children. But now capacity has been reduced to 12 beds. We have 2 wings there.
Dr. Natesio says people should realize COVID-19 is a dangerous disease and follow preventive measures.
They should avoid staying in group. They should avoid congestion. They should, if possible, make sure they stay at home, keep their children at home. When they sit,
Civil society activists want the state to install quarantine wards in Torit State Hospital. Charles Okulu, who chairs the Eastern Equatorial Civil Society Network, says the government should also set up isolation wards and send more testing kits to border points.
There should be those isolation wards in all those border points to allow them to finish all those duration given by the health officials so that they are determined whether they have the COVID-19 or not. And this is already being carried on because there are no governors in the state.
President Salva Kiir appointed ministers in February, but no governors have been appointed to the newly aligned 10 states. Ojok Francis, Eastern Equatorial State Coordinator for the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, says people must do more to stop the spread of coronavirus.
Our social cohesions and cultural complexity is very unique. All those preventive guidelines that have been given, it is very difficult to control our social cohesions. Our community are still living together. They are sharing a lot of things. People are still organizing celebrations. People are dancing. People are doing a lot of things. People are greeting themselves, which is very difficult to control.
South Sudan has 4 confirmed cases in Juba and Torit, with more than 100 contacts of COVID-19 patients in quarantine at their homes. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
At least 6 people died from police violence during the first 10 days of Kenya's dusk-to-dawn curfew imposed late March to contain the spread of the COVID-19. Human Rights Watch says in a new report that police, without apparent justification, shot and beat people at marketplaces as well as those returning home from work even before the curfew time. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the rights group is raising concerns over what it calls police brutality in Kenya.
On March 25th, President Uhuru Kenyatta announced a government plan for a nationwide dusk-to-dawn curfew starting March 27 as one of the measures to curb coronavirus. The Human Rights Watch says police appear to have enforced it in a chaotic and violent manner from the start. In downtown Nairobi, police arrested people on streets, whipping, kicking and herding them together, increasing the risk of spreading the virus. Speaking to VOA, senior Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch Otieno Namwaya said that police have since violated human rights by attacking people instead of protecting them against the virus.
From our research, we have found that at least 6 people died as a result of the curfew. Most of those 6 are as a result of beatings from the police. But beside the beatings and killings, I think the brutality of the police is much more widespread than the numbers of those who are dead is telling. There are a lot of people who are nursing injuries because of police beatings. There are a lot of people who have lost businesses because of police either demanding bribe or looting.
The agency report indicates that in Embakasi area of Eastern Nairobi, police officers forced a group of people walking home from work to kneel, then whipped and kicked them. Mr. Namwaya says the brutality is worse in rural areas and the government has failed to engage members of the public in fight against COVID-19.
And it is worse in the villages because there is no one there to record. Police brutality is unjustified. You have seen countries which have been most hit, like Italy, but you have not seen police beating people because this is not civil unrest. This is a containment measure to prevent an infectious disease from spreading. And therefore, what government needs is not force, but engagement with the public and persuasion. That's what government has failed on.
Between March 29th and April 14th, Human Rights Watch conducted phone interviews with 26 witnesses, relatives and victims of abuses related to the curfew in Nairobi, Mombasa, Kwale, Busia, Kakamega, Mandera and Homa Bay counties, revealing severe police abuses in the community. Despite the report indicating police brutality, Kenya's Inspector General of Police, Hilary Mutyambai, said that police will ensure Ministry of Health measures are followed.
People are defying these directives. Arrogant groups continue harassing the members of public in defiance of the law, including what happened on Tuesday on 14th in Malindi. I wanted to bring this one to the attention of Kenyans that police are there to protect Mwananchi and police are there to enforce the laws of this country.
Human Rights Watch says Kenyan authority should urgently investigate instances in which police shot, beat or abused people, killing or seriously injuring them, and hold those responsible to account. Reporting for VOA, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN mission in Abyei admits its failures. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get. Or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself. I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management has instructed all UN agencies, international and national non-governmental organizations operating in the country to cease remitting personal income tax of employees until state governments are formed. The minister says the order is to prevent corrupt officials from stealing tax money. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The order issued by the Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management, Peter Mayen Majongdit, on April 17th instructs all UN agencies and international and national non-governmental organizations to stop remitting personal income taxes for their employees in all states. Majongdit fears some corrupt officials may be tempted to collect the money and put into their own pockets.
The issue is that
the issue is not saying that people shouldn't pay. The issue is that we want the money to go to the right channel.
Majongdit says President Salva Kiir agreed to return the country to 10 states plus 3 administrative areas after forming 32 states. It impacted the country's already fragmented tax collection system nearly 2 months after swearing in ministers and other top officials in the unity transitional government. The parties are still deadlocked over the number of governors each party to the peace deal is allowed to appoint. Majongdit says a committee headed by Vice President James Wani Iga was formed to bring together the states that have been affected so that there are no parallel tax collections while state governments have yet to be established.
The only thing which will be lacking is the state governors, the state ministers, but already the administration should have been harmonized into one. This is a temporary thing.
Majongdit says once the state administrations are harmonized by the committee and become functional, the order can be reversed and organization can resume tax remittance. Last December, the National Revenue Authority issued a circular to all UN agencies, international and national NGOs, increasing the monthly personal income tax for each employee from 15% to 20% beginning in January as a measure to increase non-oil revenue. After the 20% tax deduction went into effect this year, some employees have complained their take-home pay is next to nothing. UN employee William Okongo says the tax increase was unexpected.
Since they have increased the payment to 20%, so it has become as a surprise to us as employees, and it has also affected our economy actually.
South Sudan's former Revenue Authority Commissioner General, Olympio Atipo, was fired last year. Since that time, the government has not made clear how much tax revenue the body collects each month. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still on tax issues, officials in Jonglei State are rejecting the orders from the National Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management, instructing all UN agencies and international and national organizations operating in the country to cease remitting personal income tax. The officials describe the minister's order as illegal, null and void. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Mayen made clear in his April 17th letter, the order went out to make sure that personal income taxes or PIT collected from UN groups and NGOs are not stolen by corrupt officials. In an April 23rd letter, Mabura Tim Mabur, Secretary General and Acting Administrator for Jonglei State, ordered all UN agencies and NGOs operating in Jonglei State to continue remitting personal income taxes into state's finance ministry or face the law.
The letter that I wrote as administrator of the state with a consultation with our lawyers and my government is to tell the NGO to disregard any communication coming from outside, because you have the contract with the state and PIT is an obligation of each and every citizen working in the state of Jonglei.
Mabur says Jonglei State's budget relies on a grant from the national government and locally generated income, including personal income tax. He calls Mayen's order an interference with the state's budget, something he says could lead to failure of most government projects.
If we let the NGOs to continue withholding the PIT, it means that all the projects of the state, ranging from the security, the daily running of the offices where we need fuel to run our normal operation, will come to a standstill, and we can afford that to happen.
The Greater Pibor Administrative Areas Coordinator, Peter Ajag-Ligo, says government activities are on a standstill because PIT collection has stopped.
This PIT is closed until the government of the state form it, then the new governor, the one come to the power, will remove it. So I had like that from my finance. Even they're trying to remove it, the account is closed. We are really suffering. We have nothing to help us.
The Secretary General of the now defunct Toriti State, Emmanuel Ochiti, says citizens need service delivery as they wait for the parties to form a full government of national unity, including states and counties. Ochiti says withholding PIT denies local leaders the money they need to keep services running.
For example, at the moment, we use it to buy fuel to support running the office. And intervention as far as security is concerned, so that our security agencies can respond effectively to where there is need. And then now, if the PIT is not there, then that decision is not right.
Ochiti urges the National Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management and Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng, who heads the Gender and Humanitarian Affairs Cluster, to reconsider and reverse the order. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has condemned a deadly attack on a BA by a suspected armed Messiria man more than a week ago. The ministry's Tuesday statement says the UN peacekeeping mission in Abyei has, quote, failed to protect Abyei residents. The spokesperson for UNISFA says the mission is facing a difficult challenge in maintaining peace in Abyei. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation says Messiria militiamen attacked the village of Mabok April 13th, killing 4 civilians, abducting 2 children, and looting and burning property. It says the UN Interim Security Force for Abyei, established in 2011 under Chapter 7 of the UN Security Council, has failed to carry out its mandate of protecting civilians. It calls on the UN Security Council and the African Union to carry out an investigation into the repeated attacks and review UNISFA's effectiveness in protecting civilians in Abyei. UNISFA's spokesperson, Daniel Adekera, confirms the attack by Messiria men on the morning of April 13th. He says UNISFA's forces are still pursuing the attackers.
4 armed suspected Messiria men attacked the village of Mabok, and the attack resulted in the killing of 3 Dinkas, while two-year-old boy was kidnapped. We later understood that actually 2 boys were kidnapped. About 30 houses were burnt, and UNISFA quickly deployed its troops in search of the suspects.
UNISFA operates under Chapter 7 of the UN Security Council Peacekeeping, which authorizes the mission to use military action to protect civilians' lives and maintain the peace. But Adekera says it is not possible to use military force for the type of attacks occurring in Abyei.
These attacks are more of criminal attacks, either by individuals or small groups with the intent to rustle cattle in most cases. UNISFA has been holding series of meetings with these groups either together or separately to preach the message of peaceful coexistence, peaceful resolution of conflicts. But these attacks appear to form part of the culture which has been in existence for many years, and that of cattle rustling. Sometimes it's difficult to use chapter 7 on an individual or a small group of criminals.
In late 2012, the Security Council passed a resolution extending the UN presence in the area and expanding UNISFA's mandate to include monitoring along the entire border between Sudan and South Sudan. But Adekere says the resolution does not give the UN the power to carry out a disarmament campaign outside Abyei town.
We don't have the mandate to disarm other than seize arms from elements that enter the box. So it's a difficult task, but UNISFA has put in place measures to checkmate this. One of them is to hold weekly meetings with the communities, either together or separately, to look at issues that have the capacity or the propensity to upset the peace and try to tackle them.
Earlier this year, a deadly attack on Abyei left dozens of civilians dead and many others wounded. The UN Security Council called for an investigation into the attack. The results have yet to be released. Adekere says UNISFA is working with the Miseria and Dinka Ngok communities to ensure a peaceful coexistence between the two. He says his organization has also been holding meetings in Juba with the government of Sudan and South Sudan to try to improve security in Abyei. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Some Sudanese citizens are worried about the rise in number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the country. Health officials have confirmed 22 new cases. Sudan has 162 confirmed cases in total and 13 deaths. Residents who earlier said they did not believe COVID-19 would affect the country now say they're following preventative measures advised by the World Health Organization and the government. Samia Argawi, a resident of Khartoum's Jabra neighborhood, says she now wears gloves and a mask when heading to the bakery. And Bella Ufende Ndima, a South Sudanese national living in Khartoum, says the rise in coronavirus cases in Sudan is causing panic in her family and the community. South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs has told all UN agencies and NGOs operating in the country to stop remitting the personal income taxes of employees until state governments are formed. Peter Mayen Majangdit is trying to prevent tax money from being stolen by corrupt officials. Mayen says when President Salva Kiir returned the country to 10 states plus the 3 administrative areas, it affected the country's already fragmented tax collection system. The parties to the peace deal are still wrangling over the appointment of state governors. And some state officials are denouncing Mayen's order telling UN agencies and NGOs to stop remitting taxes of its workers. In an April 23rd letter, Mabior Atem Mabior, Jungle State's Secretary General and Acting Administrator, ordered UN agencies and NGOs working in Jungle to continue remitting personal income taxes, or PIT, into the state's finance ministry or face the law, and called it an obligation of every citizen working in the state to pay taxes. The Greater Pibor Administrative Areas Coordinator Peter Ajak Ligo says government projects are at a standstill because PIT collection has stopped. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Weekend by Drop Dupe.
ชวนหนูหนัวบ่จัลจังบ่มวยคุลปนนี่กะลุกใจเด้อหนัวหนัวอ้ายจังหวานนี่ก็ชวนหนัวชุงหนูหนัวบ่จัลจังบ่มวยคุลปนนี่กะลุกใจเด้อแต่ต่อยืนบ่ลดติ้งจังบ่ไงบ่เวดกะดวดกะมันหนัวหนัวหนัวมวยจักมาจมวยจักกะปิ้วมวยจะเลียนคอนบ่ปิ้วจะเลียนคอน
We've been listening to Duop Group with the song Weekend. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
No, I'm not going to be sure.